Welcome to Facilitating the Mission, the podcast of Shepherd Staff Mission Facilitators. My name is Brian Mondock.
And my name is Jeff Jackson.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Jeff. Hey, man.
We still got Trip Kimball with us.
We still do. Yes. Are you still there, Trip?
I'm here.
Hey, Trip. And so if you're just joining us, there's a link in our show notes to the first show that we did with Trip where you can meet Trip and get his credentials and his story. But in this podcast, we want to jump right into the next topic with Jeff and Trip. So let it roll, guys.
Trip, so what I want to do on this session is talk specifically about the concepts and the principles that you learned on the field and that you were able to use within the context you were in there, and then the things you've experienced over the years, again, trying to apply some of these orality principles. You've referenced a lot of interaction with people that knew how to read and so forth, and that was a crucial component of it. But what I'd like to do is get your experience, too, with people that actually are either illiterate that you've interacted with over the years, or maybe if they do read, it's very clear they don't learn from what they read. They're more oral learners. So can you kind of open up that window for us?
Sure. One of the things that was a great resource and a great help was my participation in a couple of International Orality Network conferences. I think it's orality.org. You can look it up online. And there's a tremendous amount of resources. They now are doing conferences, not just in America, but in different regions of the world. And the thing that I saw with that was just how they embraced biblical storying in so many ways, but the focus was primarily sharing the gospel and reaching unreached peoples. And so that was a significant part of what they were doing, why they were doing it. But along the way, one of the things that, and this comes from different books you can find and resources you can find on orality.net, they talked about this guy named Walter Ong, who did studies on literacy and so on. And then they got into talking about our current generation. So, and this was really interesting to me. I've realized I've had to adjust how I approach things in terms of biblical, how I present biblical truth or just mentoring, and I won't get sidetracked into that. But what I learned from the orality conferences is that the young Gen Xers, the millennials, and then whatever is the next generation, they are not readers generally. In fact, the majority of them are not readers. Even Gen Xers, once they get out of school, if they've graduated college, they'll read maybe one or two books the rest of their life. Well, because there's so much on the internet. And the younger generations are much more, and I don't think this is any big news, they're much more audio and video connected. And so they're much more engaged that way. And so they're oral learners as well. I mean, it has nothing to do with the intelligence.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with even your educational background. It has more to do with how you take things in. And again, storying, real good storytelling engages people in their mind, their heart, their emotions. It opens up their imagination. And as I said, it's experiential in the sense that you're bringing people with you into the story so they can almost view it from the inside out or inside the story as if they were part of the story rather than just reading it to them, which is, it's more like a spectator sport. It's like going to a baseball game, which I love, you and I love, although you have, unfortunately, your Padres fan.
I know. Pray for me.
Well, my Dodgers, I ain't doing too good either. But it's like going to a game and watching it and then playing in the game. It's totally different. And I am a participator. It's like I always want, I can't do it anymore, but I loved playing even slow pitch softball. I loved just participating in it. It wasn't a matter of being good at it. I just loved participating in it. So that's how I see storying. So I don't know if I really answered the question you asked me.
Well, you sort of did. Observations that you just made, especially about, say, the younger generation, say maybe, you know, under 30, or that they really, they learn more watching and hearing rather than reading. So, and then you've used the word a couple times, storying. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Like, unpack a little bit further for us what storying is, particularly for people that are not able to read. And are there, you know, are there various methods of storying that are not the same, but are effective?
Yes. The answer, you know, I'll kind of work backwards. Yes, there are several different forms, and you can actually find that. I mean, I can give you some resources that I know. One of them is down in Orlando called ST4T, or Storytelling for Trainers. And then there is Simply the Story. I think you're familiar with that one. Yeah, I can kind of come back to that. But there's a lot of different forms. Some people are very strict in how they approach the scripture text itself. So one of the classic resource is a guy named J.O. Terry. He was a Baptist missionary to Mindanao, for one. And in the mid-80s, he was really kind of breaking ground with biblical storytelling in the Philippines, working with different indigenous groups in the Mindanao area. And, you know, it's kind of interesting to me that that was happening, even though I wasn't in the Philippines at that time, but that's really when the inductive Bible study seminars got started in there. On one hand, they're so different and yet the same. So there are different approaches. There's a very simple way to learn it. And I think some people are just given to telling stories. But it's not like just telling a story and embellishing it. What you want to do is you want to look at the text and you want to be able to share all the details that are in the text in such a way that it's your story, as if it was your story. So as you tell it, even what the sequence of it is in the text isn't as critical as are you covering the details in such a way that you're getting the whole story. And then one of the things that I found, this happened with working with the students, and I've found it useful in working with people who are not strong readers, because I've worked with people who are either dyslexic or just weren't really strong leaders. They didn't have a real good background in terms of reading, is to look at different English versions. I'm big on God's Word. It's a translation that's actually produced in Orange Park, Florida, near me. The New Living Translation, not the New Living Bible, but the New Living Translation, the Easy Reader version. And there's several different versions out there. Like Brian mentioned, the YouVersion app, Bible app, and you can find a lot of those in there. The value of them is that they're doing this kind of the same type of thing of putting it in their own words. In other words, they're rewording things in different ways, but it's not paraphrasing. So there's a big difference between paraphrasing and rewording. Paraphrasing is you tend to interpret a lot of the figurative language, you interpret things. When you're retelling it, you're actually just rewording it. So, you know, I mean, one, like the word love in Greek, there's four different words for in Greek. We have one word, love. It's the context that we use it in that describes it or defines it. And so that process of rewording embeds it in, not just in your mind, but it also embeds it in your heart. There's a process that you can learn that's very kind of mechanical, but ultimately you don't want it to be mechanical. You want it to flow out of you as if it's your story. Is that any clearer?
Yes, it is. Very, very good.
It's almost one of those things where it's easier to explain it by doing it and by demonstrating it than by just kind of describing it.
Well, you know, even with my own experience while I was out on the field, and then when I got on to the real understanding of how people learn, audio learners versus visual learners versus kinetic learners and all that kind of stuff. What I found, and when I learned the Simply the Story method, was I put it into practice in different contexts here, just in my local community with my local church. So I taught the senior citizens ministry using the Simply the Story method, and then I taught the college age group. And then I told them when I taught, I said, listen, I don't want you to open your Bibles. This is going to be the first Bible study you've ever been to where I say, don't open your Bibles. I'm going to tell you a story. And so, so working it through, and then it was the process of doing that. And then even taking it down to the level of, you know, kindergartners and first and second graders, we did this outreach to a low-income apartment complex here locally. And we had a homework club going with college-age kids kind of coming over and helping these kids. A lot of them immigrant families, their parents don't speak English. And we would go in and help them with their homework and getting these kids together and then doing a storying method to kind of communicate who God is and the truth of the gospel. It connects with them. And it's actually sort of the proof in the pudding, you might say, that really God has hardwired us. I mean, if you think about it, I mean, the way my mind works is I'm thinking, wait a minute, you know, God creates Adam and Eve. He didn't create them with the ability to read, as far as I know. Reading came at a later point in time. Reading became something and, you know, communicating in written form was a skill or a tool that I think God empowered Adam and Eve to develop. But by nature, we learn audibly. We learn visibly rather than necessarily through reading. Reading is a manufactured skill. And the reality of it is that manufactured skill, a lot of people don't possess today, a high percentage of people. And even a lot of the ones that do possess it, it's not the best way they learn. So that's where the connection in this realm to me is just, it's so interesting. And so I think, and one of the things that I think, you know, you've already shared on, and I think you could probably add a little bit more to this, is that when we're talking about orality and storying stuff, we're talking about maybe the most important tool for reaching non-literate people, but an incredible asset and tool for reaching people that live in our own neighborhoods and here in our own country.
Absolutely. I always have to see some practical application or practical usability of it. That's the beauty of the storying. So, I mean, I see it woven into personal evangelism today in America or for short-term teams. And I'll even explain how some of the things that I've kind of developed for working with that. And then also for long-term missionaries in just their ongoing things. I mean, I've used storying on an airplane, traveling across, you know, the U.S. or, you know, wherever I am, and just engaging people and say, hey, can I tell you a story? And I've told a story on a college campus. It was part of our assignment when I was going through this one guy's biblical storying training. And we went out to a local college campus, and these weren't Christian kids. It wasn't a Christian college. It was just a, you know, secular college that's in our town in Jacksonville. And I was impressed with how people listened and just how it engaged them. And it impressed me. But one of the things, can I share a couple stories about where I really saw this in action? There was a group of Korean people that we got connected to in Jacksonville. One of the gals that was really involved, she was bringing a couple of the kids to church and to Sunday school. And she asked me, says, Pastor, can you come and just do a little Bible study with this family for a while? So I agreed. I really didn't know what I was getting into, of course, but I agreed. And it was across town from where I lived. And they had been refugees from Myanmar and had been in the Thai refugee camps and then had immigrated over to the U.S. And I know you had quite a bit of experience with not just Korean refugees, but others from many other places when you were in the Phoenix area. So I came in, and then I found out that the father spoke Chinese and Burmese. The mother didn't speak Chinese, and the father had a Chinese Bible. The mother spoke some Burmese, but mostly Thai and Korean. And then the high school age children spoke English pretty well. And then she spoke some English. Her English was okay. I mean, we could converse. But the father, no, not at all. So I started teaching them through the Gospel of John. And you know, I'm thinking, well, the Gospel of John, it's simple. But the problem with the Gospel of John is it's so simple in its language, but it's so deep in its theological truth. So, I mean, like right at the very first chapter, I'm having to really think hard. Okay, how do I explain this to the father who doesn't really understand Thai, so that his wife can really explain it to him more clearly? And he doesn't understand English. I can't explain it. His teenagers can't explain it to him. So I found myself having to almost retell everything in like three different phases. But the thing is they got it. It challenged me, but they got it. But one of the ones where it really, you know, I really began to understand this. So I was asked to go to Ethiopia to minister to a church that was primarily HIV positive affected people. They weren't all HIV positive, but they were. It was composed of people who had family members who were HIV positive, and so they were actually pushed out of the local churches, and so they formed their own church. And so I was asked to go, and this was in a village called Omo Village. There had actually been a World Vision outreach there, like back in the 70s, I guess. And so we drove. It was a day and a half drive out of Addis Ababa, and literally it was just a village. I was the only white face for probably hundreds of miles, and I'm assuming, and nobody there spoke English except for a couple of people with very broken English and my translator, my assistant, and he was from this village. Actually, or he was from this area anyway, but he hadn't spoken the dialect in years and years and years. And he has a master's degree and education and so forth. And so, you know, we got together and I was teaching inductive Bible study to them. I mean, looking back on it now, I think, what in the world was I doing? You know, but it's what I had. So I did it. So we got there and he turned to me and he said, Pastor, they don't understand Amharic. That's the national language of Ethiopia. So I have to translate it to them in their dialect, but I haven't used it in a long time. And so I began to realize that we were going to run into some difficulties as I was walking through this inductive Bible study workshop that I'd put together, especially when I got to the word discernment, because I usually talk about it in relationship to the Greek word diakrinos and, you know, being able to see through something. And I realized before I got there, this is not going to work. There's no way it's going to communicate across two different languages in this African setting. So I thought, oh, what do I do? And then it was just like the Lord spoke to my heart very clearly and gave me a story to tell that illustrated the very thing that I was talking about. And so I just, spur of the moment, I told that story the best I could remember it. I later looked at it in the Bible and, you know, I had done well with the story. So I told that story. And then I came to another place and I realized, wow, I can't explain that. It's too linear. It's too Western. And so once again, I dug out a story and from the Bible that applied to that or illustrated it or would express it in some way. And it was like they were totally, completely, fully engaged. And my interpreter had no problem with it whatsoever because I was just communicating a story to him and then he was communicating the story to them. But because it was familiar to him and it was fairly familiar to them too, it just flowed in a way that I rarely have experienced in working with an interpreter. It just sealed for me the value of biblical storying and the value of using storying in a dialogue approach. Now, that's the other thing that I think it's dropped out a lot of times. You're not just telling the story. You want to dialogue with the story. You want to use questions that bring them back to the characters in the story, what they said, what they did. Then you want to dig a little deeper with why. And it's fascinating when you start, you can look in someone's eyes or you can look in their, see it in their faces that they're really thinking about stuff and the wheels are turning and they're processing it all along. And then it's like when they get it, it looks like there's a light bulb that goes off inside of them because it's like they smile and it's like, they're like, oh yeah, you know, it's like, now I get it. I got it. And it's fun. I mean, it's just, it's actually just a lot of fun. So I just have found it very, very practical, whether you're overseas or whether you're working in a cross-cultural setting in your city, in your town, your that area. And as far as personal evangelism, I've used it in terms of personal evangelism. I've used it with short-term teams. And one of the things that I've kind of developed in the last couple of years is helping people who are preparing to go on a short-term team to learn how to tell their testimony. I don't call it a testimony. I say, think of it as your life story. Find a Bible story that fits your life story, and then share that Bible story and with your life story. And you know, it doesn't matter the sequence. You could tell your life story and then tell the Bible story, or you could tell the Bible story that leads into your life story. When people can do that, it's like it gives them a reference point, not only personally, but it gives them a reference point in the Bible as well. And so then you're communicating a biblical truth. The other thing is I think about the parables. There's like 40-some parables. And we've actually done this with some of the people that we had in our ministry and outreaches. We'll have them act out the parable with no words whatsoever. They'll just act it out. And we'll tell the story over it. And so we'll tell the story, and then they act it out. And it's, you know, so you're dramatizing it or you're illustrating it at the same time. It's very simple stuff, but it's powerful. It's engaging, and it's a lot better than most of the skits that I've seen brought over from America.
Right.
Tripp, I love how you make people work to make this happen.
Well, that's the only way you can learn it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Interactive learning. So Tripp, sort of before we wrap this up, to sort of maybe put you on the spot, when you talked about training short-term teams to do, you know, to share their story and use a biblical story that may be parallel, what do you do for your story? What's the biblical story that you use to sort of tell your life story?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I try to do it based on the situation. One of them is like the story of the rich young ruler. You know, he knows everything, but he's got to sell everything in order to get, well, I mean, that relates to me because I see it as when I entered the ministry, my family was not happy, you know, and my wife understood that we were going to be operating at poverty level. And then when we were missionaries, it became even more of that reality, having to live off of support, faith support. But I also like short little stories like the parable of the two sons, because that illustrates my nature. And that is the one son says, the father says to the son, son, go work in my vineyard. And he says, okay, dad, and then never goes. And then there's the other son who says, no, I'm not going to go, and then later goes. That's me. The second son is me. And so I relate that to how I have tended to be very rebellious and very resistant and cynical for whatever reasons. Doesn't matter the reasons. But the point being is that personifies me. You know, it's like I'm going to challenge most everything that I do or most anything that anybody says. And even my own testimony, which is where, you know, if you can't put it in your own words, it just isn't much value to people who are non-biblically literate, if that makes sense. I mean, because that was me. I had a lot of book learning, a lot of learning in terms of philosophies and different religions. But what I didn't have was a good grasp and understanding of the Bible, because it's truth that it needs to be spiritually revealed. And I think that's another thing that happens within the process of biblical storying, is that you're giving people opportunity to be involved in the story in such a way that they're experiencing it in much the same way that the original hearers of that story experienced it. Mm-hmm. Just to illustrate it, there's on the International Orality Network's website, I think on the homepage or somewhere along there, there's a Native American proverb that goes like this. Tell me a fact and I will learn it. Tell me a truth and I will believe it. Tell me a story and it will live in my heart forever. That's a Native American proverb. And And the point is that we are so oriented in our Western approach to evangelism, to Bible teaching, to even to missions, that we, because of what we call propositional truth, you know, we present these truths, we present these arguments just like as if people were reading the epistles, you know, like Romans or whatever. But generally speaking, most people don't respond real well to that because they don't have a frame of reference to understand it. But when you put it within a story, they understand it at a different level. They just get it.
And, you know, the validation of that, and again, goes back to God's, the way we're hardwired in God's image and likeness is, I mean, movies are nothing but stories in visual and audio form. And movies are a multi-billion, trillion-dollar industry globally. What is a movie? I mean, there's a story. I really like that proverb, that American Indian proverb. So any final thoughts, Tripp, before we wrap this up?
I just would really encourage people, if you're skeptical about it, or to check out some of the resources like International Orality Network, Simply the Story, Storytelling for Trainers, Share the Story, biblicalstorying.com. There's storyingthescriptures.com. I mean, there's several different resources out there. And they can even go to my website and contact me, and I'd be glad to, or I can even send something to you guys in terms of just some basic things that I've developed for learning a biblical story, and then also how to weave it into your personal testimony or life story.
Great.
We'll definitely put all those links on the website. And Tripp, if you do have something like that in a PDF or in some kind of an article on your personal blog, we'll definitely link to it and make sure that resource is available in both the show notes and some of our resources area of our webpage.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. To learn more about becoming a missionary with Shepherd Staff, go to ssmfi.org/join. Connect with us on Facebook or Twitter by searching @ShepStaff on either platform.